There are at least three miracles in this story. The first miracle, in my opinion, is that we find it in the Gospel according to Mark. I wouldn't be surprised to find it in Luke's Gospel, because Luke kind of goes out of his way throughout his Gospel to show that Jesus had a special ministry with the poor and with the outcast and with those society saw as less than or unworthy. So Luke makes a point of telling us that Jesus' birth was announced to poor shepherds, that Jesus spent time with women and lepers, and that Jesus spread his ministry to the Gentiles, to those outside his own people. But Mark doesn't do that. Mark's a pretty tight storyteller. He doesn't add a lot, he doesn't embellish a lot, and he doesn't go out of his way to make sure he's including less well-known stories or anything like that. Mark just kind of tells it like it is. And we find this story here in the earliest gospel, in Mark, in quite great detail. And so that in itself is remarkable. That in itself says to me that this was a powerful story and an account of what had happened, perhaps from someone who had seen it or who had been very close to that story. The second miracle, in my opinion, is that Jesus takes the time to heal not one, but two women, two females. Women are already seen as less than in Jesus' society at the time, and we know that. But Jesus stops to heal not one, but two. And not just any women. The first, the young girl, is the daughter of a leader of the synagogue. Essentially, this person, the father, is a rival of Jesus' of sorts. He's not come in direct conflict with the leaders of the synagogues yet, but there's obviously going to be some tension there. And he goes to heal this young girl, and she's not yet of marriageable age. She's approaching marriageable age, so she's young and can't yet really contribute to her society. And the older woman, the woman who's been suffering from hemorrhages, we assume that she is probably much older to have such a problem, and that she maybe is on the other end of the spectrum, a woman who's past her prime and who in society can no longer contribute to the well-being of her society. And she's unclean because of the nature of her disease. So these are two individuals who are sort of doubly cursed. First, simply because they're female, and so a little less worthy in the eyes of the society. And then second, because they're either too young or too old to be of great use to their community. The little girl, at least, has the potential, right? Because she can grow up a little bit more, and she can fetch a dowry, and she can have children, hopefully male children, and thus contribute to her society. But the older woman, she's reached a point in her life where her society kind of pushes her to the edge and says, you're not here anymore. Those who had an illness, especially one dealing with lots of blood and kind of yucky stuff, were unclean, were not touched. And so she's on the outside of society. She's on the edge of the crowd. She's on the fringes of that society and kept there. So Jesus goes off to heal this daughter, the young girl, and the crowd follows him. And on the way there, this woman approaches him in the crowd because she's tried everything else, and she's getting to the point where she just wants this pain to end. And so she reaches out, not to stop Jesus, not to distract him or make him pause or make him notice her, not to delay him in where he's going, not to get his attention. She reaches out just to brush the edge of his clothing, because she thinks even that will be enough. And it works. Instantly, as soon as she does it, instantly, she's healed. She gets what she was looking for, what she needed so desperately. Here's the third miracle. That wasn't it. Here's the third miracle. Jesus is now free to go. He's healed this woman, whether intentionally or not. She's fine. Her body has been made well. Jesus doesn't even have to break his stride. He can just keep walking. He can keep going. He can get to that girl's house before she dies and save himself the extra energy of having to raise someone from the dead rather than just healing them. He can just keep right on going. He doesn't have to turn around. But that's not what he does. Jesus stops. Jesus takes notice that something has happened. Jesus gets distracted from what he's doing. And he turns around in the crowd and he seeks her out. Who touched me? Who touched me? His disciples are like, there are a million people here. What do you mean, who touched me? He says, who touched me? Someone touched me. Someone needed me. Someone reached out. He turns around and he takes notice. He didn't have to do that. She was already healed in body. But that wasn't enough. He turns around, he seeks her out, he finds her. And then he does something that would have been horribly and terribly unfamiliar to her. He treats her with compassion, with love, with respect, with dignity. In short, he treats her like a human being, something that would have been foreign to her after so many years, 12 years living in invisibility. 12 years on the edge of a society that would pay her no mind. He treats her like a person. And so heals not only her body, but her spirit. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to get distracted. I got to know several homeless people individually when I lived outside of Boston. And each one of them, separately, told me the same thing. Each one of them said that the worst part about being homeless is not that you don't have a home. It's not the lack of food or clothing or shelter or the resources that are extended to the rest of society. The worst part about being homeless is the way people refuse to take notice. The worst part about being homeless is how people walk by and glaze their eyes over and they carry on as if they've never seen you. In the movie The Fisher King, there's a main character who's homeless. And somebody just kind of in the movie walks by and throws some change in the cup and keeps right on going. And another character turns to him and says, that person didn't even look at you. And the homeless man says he paid so he wouldn't have to look. The worst part is that being invisible, being pushed to the outside edge of society. Jesus refuses to do that with this woman. He refuses to let her remain invisible. And what he's doing is really important. It's not like he's just taking a stroll and you know, he's got nothing else to do, so he can stop and take notice. He's going to save a young girl who's dying. This is life and death stuff. It's really important stuff. And yet he stops and he takes notice. He gets distracted because sometimes getting distracted is important stuff too. It's easy for us to do that sometimes, to get caught up in what we're doing, to get caught up in our professional lives or our personal lives or just the day-to-day stuff that keeps us going or whatever crisis it is that's on our plate this week, because there's always a crisis that pops up last minute. Sometimes it's easy to do that even in our ministry, to get focused on, as a church, to get focused on organizing and maintaining the structure of our church, or to get really into the worship and life together that we so enjoy, or to get focused on planning our mission here and abroad, and we forget to take notice of the other need around us, to seek out the people that are on the fringes, that are on the edge, that need to be noticed. Where are the people that aren't in our church, that aren't represented in our congregation? Where are the people that are pushed to the edge in the town of Skodak or the village of Castleton? Where are the people that are marginalized in the capital region? Who are the ones in America that are oppressed or unable to speak for themselves? Where are the ones the world has forgotten? I heard a story this week from a true story from a friend of a friend about a man on a train. There was a man on a train with his infant daughter, and he was screaming in a kind of psychotic episode, and he began hitting and shaking his infant daughter in front of a train full of people. And some of the people on the train just stood there, immobilized by the shock and the horror of what they were seeing. And some people averted their eyes because it was too terrible or too embarrassing to watch. And some people tried to just glaze over as if they didn't see. And one woman, just one woman, who had her own young daughter with her, one woman walked over to this man. I imagine she had some place she needed to be. She had something important she was going to do. And she certainly had the great importance of protecting her own daughter. But this one woman went over to the man, pulled the baby from his arms, got off at the next stop, and marched directly to the police station. The baby was given medical attention. Her father was given some psychological attention. And the baby's expected to make a full recovery physically. In taking notice and refusing to turn away, to glaze over, this woman saved a life. Sometimes getting distracted, sometimes allowing ourselves to be drawn in by the need of the others, those who can't speak for themselves, those who can't protect themselves, sometimes that's a matter of life and death. Sometimes it's a matter of faith or of dignity or of doing the right thing. And always, always taking notice, being distracted, is about extending that blessing the woman receives, that third miracle, the healing of spirit that comes with being recognized as a person, as a beloved child of God. There are many people. Many, many people who are on the fringes of society, who are on the edge, who are crying out for just that brush with grace. The merest hint of blessing, of welcome, of love. Who are they? Are they the poor in our midst? The homeless? The destitute? Are they the lower middle class who live in the wrong parts of town or drive the wrong kinds of cars or wear the wrong kinds of clothes and so are just that much more shunned than others? Are they the members of the gay and lesbian community reaching out this week for rights, for the privileges and the rights and the protections that are extended to other couples in marriage and yet again pushed to the side by the decision of the State Court of Appeals? Nope. Our Constitution doesn't require that. Are they the children who can't speak for themselves, who need protection like that child on the train? Are they the elderly, closed in their homes, seeking a place of love and support in their golden years, seeking a community that will hold them up after all of their many years of holding up others? Whoever they are, wherever those people on the edges are, we can never help if we don't take notice, if we don't get distracted. As we come to the communion table together in a few minutes, we must never forget that what we do is an imitation of Christ. What we do is an imitation of the one who dined with tax collectors, with prostitutes, with sinners, with the poorest and the lowliest people of his time. And we can never forget that what we do in communion is an act of remembering. We're remembering Christ and we're remembering Christ's body. To dismember is to tear apart. To remember is to make whole. But we cannot make whole if we glaze our eyes over, and we cannot make whole if we never allow ourselves that vulnerability. When we fail to take notice, not only does something human die in us, but something Christ-like dies in us as well. We have to allow ourselves to get distracted from time to time. Amen.